Today we're going to learn about Perek Beis, hopefully Perek Beis Pasuk Ches until Pasuk Yud Zayin. And the hope is to talk about two topics. One is the fact that Adam was put into Gan Eden, and then the commandment that he's not allowed to eat from the tree of Das Tovara. Eitz Das Tovara. We'll soon see whether we get to all of that tonight, but I hope so. And as always, Hirsch has a couple of really, really deep insights that open up everything. And it really is so consistent with so many other things we've seen. So first point he makes is in Pasuk Ches, Vayita Hashem Elokim, and there's again that name of Hashem again. Hashem, who creates nature, but is involved in the education of man. He planted man, he put man, Began Eden, Adam, Mikedem. First, Hashem planted a garden. He didn't put anyone anywhere yet. He planted a garden, Mikedem, in the east. I don't know what this east is. Vayosem Sham. So he put him there. He put Adam there, Esa Adam, Asher Yotzar, whom he had formed. So Hashem took this human, this Adam, and he put him into. He was made outside Gan Eden, and he put him into the garden that Hashem had planted. So Hirsch already points out something right here. Man was created outside paradise and commanded to live in paradise, even in this world. Soon he's going to show you that this is not some metaphor about some idealistic concept. It's a real location, which the Torah identifies its location, its geographic location. So Hashem is saying, on this very physical world that we live in, on earth, man can live a life of paradise. And I'll just quote him directly. This earthly paradise is the destiny of man and earth, even in this world. We are shown here what we should be, how we should live, and how this world would be a paradise if we would be what we were commanded to be. That's one point. Just like the life on earth itself for ourselves can be a paradise, and we can transform the world to be a paradise if we live up to what we're supposed to be living like. And then he throws in later, and he seems to be doing this consistently, as he gives us an overview of a universal look, what Hashem made for the whole world, not just the Jews. But then he always throws in somewhere, at least a sentence somewhere, later this is repeated with Klal Yisrael and Eretz Yisrael. And sometimes he even makes a point, which we'll soon see, and maybe not this week, but next week, that on certain topics, Klal Yisrael is expected to do it on a higher level. We heard that about Shabbos. The world has one kind of Shabbos. Klal Yisrael is a different. Lady is going to talk about, in marriage, the expectations of what marriage looks like. By Kedushin, it's different than the marriage of what Hashem expects of the whole world. But it's a higher level in general that Hashem wants of the whole world, and then Klal Yisrael has yet something more. He doesn't get into the details more than the land itself could have become a paradise had we only lived up to everything that we were supposed to in Eretz Yisrael. Okay, the next pasuk. Vayatzmach Hashem alakim min ha'adama kol etz nechmad lemare. So Hashem caused every kind of tree to grow from the soil, delightful to the sight. B'tov lemachol, and good for food. The etz hachayim b'soch hagan, and the tree of life in the middle of the garden, right in the center. The etz hadas tovara, a different tree, also a tree of knowledge, of what is good and what is evil. Okay, so another interesting point Hirsch points out. Notice the order. When Hashem is pointing out how lovely this Gan Eden is, first it says it's beautiful to the sight, and then it talks about tasty. It's tov lemachol. So one of them, tov nechmad lemare, is more of an aesthetic sense. Man's sense of beauty. The other one is man's physical sense. It tastes good, but the stuff you touch and you eat and you like. So here he says the Torah is putting value to man's aesthetic sense. There is sanctity to man's sense of beauty. And this confirms that man has a higher dignity than the rest of the animal kingdom. I don't know, you know, maybe we see too many cartoons. We see Snoopy looking at a beautiful sunset, so we think animals marvel at the wonders of nature, how beautiful it is. But Hirsch doubts that anyone else has this besides man. We don't know if cats enjoy a pretty sunset or the landscape of a beautiful garden. And what's the point of having this aesthetic sense? What's the reason why Hashem would want that in man? So Hirsch writes that it prevents man from sinking to the level of a beast. Joy and beauty of nature, and particularly in the beauty of the plant world, leads us to rejoice also in moral beauty. And every time Hirsch talks about moral, again and again, I keep seeing it, it's about what we do with our body to direct our body to some higher calling. Of course, morality is choosing what's right and wrong, but it's always what we do, which actions we take. And the body can be pulled in different directions. So in the physical world, there's an aesthetic beauty. And that's, he's saying, like a stepping stone to appreciating that our physical body can be an elevated physical existence. It's not quite the same as the kedusha of learning a deep piece of Gemara, a good Reb Chaim, a good Shtickel Torah, something deep and inspiring from the Zohar. I'm sure your neshama is dancing for joy. But the fact that in the physical world, there's this stepping stone, there's this beautiful sense of majesty and elevation is itself almost a Pesach, an opening to having our physical world also be an elevated sense. Everybody knows the famous quote that Hirsch visited when he was in Switzerland. He visited the Alps, and he said he doesn't want to die, and they're going to ask him, one day he's going to get upstairs and say, Shamshen, did you visit my Alps? He knows he's going to have to answer for that if he doesn't go see it. So I believe it fits into this exact thing that we're seeing here. So the pasuk went on and said, the Eitz HaChayim, he says, apparently there's some quality in this tree that man would have lived forever had he eaten from it. The Eitz Hadas Tov HaRa. So what is this Eitz Hadas? I promised you last week that we're going to get into this subject. So first Hirsch writes, there are those, I know that I saw this in Rav Dessler, and I think it's based on a Rambam, but I just don't remember for sure. Maybe it's a Kuzari. I don't remember. But he writes, there are those who presume, when they hear about Eitz Hadas Tov HaRa, that only after partaking of the fruit of the Eitz Hadas Tov HaRa was man enabled to know good and evil. But as long as he had not yet eaten from the tree, he could not distinguish between good and evil. There are those who say that. And so do some of our philosophers teach. Until partaking of this fruit, man knew only theoretical differentiation, truth from falsehood. I'm sure that Rav Dessler talks about this. Man had a sense of emes v'sheker, and then something about the tree was implanted within man. It transformed man to then have a sense of good and evil. Hirsch rejects this, and he says that if you don't have a sense of good and evil, then the whole idea of having a choice can't make any sense. If it's all hypothetical, then there's no real struggle to make a choice. So, but yet man was assigned the prohibition. He was told, don't do this. And where's the struggle if it's so clear? So therefore, he says, it must be then he did possess a sense of duty and could distinguish between forbidden and permitted. And that's the knowledge of good and evil. So then what is the Torah saying over here? What does it mean that this is the Eitz Hadas Tov HaRa? So Hirsch instead says, two things. First of all, Al Shem Sofo, and then he says Al Shem Tchilaso. What happens at the end, and even from the very start, before man did anything. Through this tree, knowledge of good and evil will be acted upon and decided. Through its fruit, man will choose what is bad and good in his sight. In other words, Hashem tells you what is good. That's what he says, and even before you start. This tree is what is good and bad for him, and how we should distinguish good from bad. Before you get started, Hashem tells you this is good, this is bad. This is the tree that determines that for us. So let me read to you really where this is going. As we shall see later, this tree appealed to man's taste, imagination, and contemplative mind. His taste, his imagination, his mind drew man to this tree and tempted him to eat of its fruit. Your logic, it looks, it's perfect. It's right in the middle of the whole garden. It smells delicious. What could be wrong? Nevertheless, God forbade man to eat of the fruit of this tree. In other words, partaking of this fruit was defined as being bad for man. This tree then was to remind man of that teaching on whose observance man's whole eminence depends. A person's senses, imagination, and intelligence may tell him that a certain thing is very good. Nevertheless, it may conflict with his higher calling. And if he partakes of it, this may be an offense deemed by God as deserving of death. From this tree, we learn that in judging what is good or evil, man should not rely on his own senses, his own imagination, or his own intelligence. Rather, he should obey the revealed will of God and follow the lead of his wisdom. Only then will he fulfill his purpose on earth and be worthy of having the world shaped into a paradise for him. It's very simple. Follow the rules. And even though man is offered a world that seems to be appealing to him, and even his logic sometimes tells him otherwise, when push comes to shove, if you have it clear what Hashem wants, it's a chok. It doesn't make any sense to you. This is where the beauty of the world will flourish, when man is completely in sync with the Ratzon Hashem. We've spoken about it before, that the whole Bria is already in sync, but they don't have the struggle. But in our physical world, we have our own logic, we have our own physical body, our urges, and things pull us in another direction. This is the challenge, and Hashem is promising us, you will live a life of Gan Eden. Your world will flourish, and you will have bracha in your life if you can put yourself aside and put the Ratzon Hashem first. So that's a critical lesson, which we'll soon get to when we get into the details of exactly what the Nachash told Chava. That won't be for this week. It won't even be next week. When we get to that, you'll hear exactly where this challenge was directly put in front of Adam, but not for this week. Okay, so that's the critical part that I wanted to read you. Now, let's read about where this garden was. So the Torah defines exactly where it was. V'nar yotze me'eden l'hashkos esagan. So a river was going forth from Eden to water the garden. U'misham yipared v'hayol abba rashim. From there, it divides and becomes four sources. Shem ha'echad Pishon. One of these sources, one of these water channels is Pishon. Hu ha'sove this kol eretz ha'chavila. It encompasses the whole land of Chavila, Asher Sham Hazav, that's where the gold is. Maybe Africa. Uzahav Ha'aretz Ahitov, the gold of this land is good. Sham HaBedolach, there the Bedolach, modern Hebrew Bedolach means diamonds. So, you know, they got a lot of diamonds in Africa too. The Evan HaShoam, the Shoam stone found there, that's one river. The Shem HaNor HaSheni Gichon, second river is Gichon. Hu HaSoviv Kol Eretz Kush, the one encompasses the whole land of Cush. B'shem Echad, Hashem Anor Ashlishi, Chidekel. The river is Chidekel. Hu Haolech Kidmas Ashur, flows to the east of Ashur. Havehanor Ravi, Hu Pras. And the fourth is Pras. Hirsch says scholars trying to figure out exactly where these places are. They can't find them. They're challenging the validity of the Torah. He says, well, the truth is, he doesn't see any. This is a question. First of all, two of them we think we know, the Euphrates and the Tigris. By Assyria, and he says, however, the place where they connect doesn't have to be above ground. They could be flowing under the ground at some spot, and then they flow out to these different places, or then they reconnect by Gan Eden. And maybe these four lands that the Torah is emphasizing is that they're very lush in certain qualities, and the riches of the minerals or whatever of those locations met and then flowed into Gan Eden, so that the best of all the places in the world was, at least at that moment in time, at this location. But he points out again that this is a real spot on earth, and whether the spot on earth is still that rich and lush is irrelevant, but at that point, the point was being made that with listening to the Ratzon Hashem, the world could have become such a paradise. So, Vayikach Hashem Elokim Asa Adam. Now, Hashem took man, after he created this place, this amazing place, and he placed them into Gan Eden to serve it and to guard it. And Hirsch points out he didn't ask him to become a farmer. First of all, he has a problem. Why is it Lashon Nekeva in the feminine? The word for Gan is a masculine word. So he talked to Yehuda Albin. He has Al Shtekel Torah. He says it's not talking about that. It's with a neshama, and it's about many psukim earlier. Hirsch doesn't say that chat at all. He says that sometimes the word Gan can mean, or maybe it's going the word Eden, it could be Lashon Nekeva. But La'avdo L'shama, he says, obviously is much more than just tilling the soil. Rather, it includes man's whole moral conduct. In other words, your job in the garden is to follow the rules of how to live in this garden, what to eat, what not to eat, what to keep away from, and what he does and what he refrains from doing. That's the avodah in Gan Eden, as we already discussed. We have already indicated this above. Man's moral conduct and his conscientious use of the bounties of nature advance nature towards its purpose and enable nature to continue flourishing. Our sages, too, relate La'avdo l'shama to Torah mitzvahs. There's all kinds of midrashim about this, and there's midrashim that say that the malachim were cooking up food, and they were grilling food. They didn't have to do any work, really. So even on a simple level, though, La'avdo l'shama could mean the following the rules of how to live in this gan. The pasuk tezayin. Vayitzav Hashem Elokim ala Adam lemor. Hashem commanded Adam to say, Mikol eitz hagan ochol tochel, from all the trees in this garden you may eat. Umeitz hadas tovara, but from this one tree, which determines what is good and bad, lo sochal, you shouldn't eat, mimenu. Ki b'yom acholcha mimenu mos tamos, on the day that you eat from it, you will die. And just to get that out of the way, we know they didn't die, but perhaps they did die, because we don't really know. First of all, it could be liable to death, her says, Yechayev Misa, but maybe they won't die. But he says it also, we know that they were kicked out of Gan Eden. Who knows what life was like before Gan Eden was, before they were kicked out? For all we know, just like we know, her says that when we die, we don't die. We're still alive, and our life force goes with our neshama, but we leave one location and go somewhere else. For all we know, leaving Gan Eden was exactly the same. For all we know, Gan Eden was such an experience that leaving it was exactly the same as what happens when a person dies and goes to another location. We just don't know what Gan Eden was to really appreciate that. But let's get to the one of the big points that I really wanted to share with you today, and that is, what was so challenging about listening to this command? So let me just read you directly from this, and with this we're going to call it a day. I just wanted to really get to this point. The command set forth in these psukim that we just read begins man's training for his moral calling. It begins human history, and it shows all future generations the path in which they are to walk. It is a prohibition, right? It's a losase, and it is not a mitzvah sichlis, a rational prohibition. On the contrary, all the perceptive faculties given to man, taste, imagination, and intellect, oppose this prohibition. Man, with his own intellect, would never have decreed upon himself such a prohibition. What is more, even after the prohibition was given to him, he could find no reason for it other than the absolute will of God. Hashem didn't say why he shouldn't eat from it. He just said, don't have it. I'm telling you, eating from it is bad. He didn't say, this is a poisonous tree. This is a tree that's going to do something to you. He just said, I'm not letting you have it. This prohibition, then, is a classic example of a chok. Moreover, it is a dietary prohibition. And those who were bound by it received it as an oral tradition. So there's three things going on there. It's a chok. It involves ma'acholos asuros, prohibited foods. And it's Torah Shebaal Peh. It was communicated to Adam, and yet Chava and her descendants were commanded to obey it. So Chava didn't hear it directly from God. Chava was told it by Adam. So for her, it's Torah Shebaal Peh. This command, then, is a mitzvah lo sase, a chok. It prohibits ma'achalos asuros, and it was transmitted as Torah Shebaal Peh. Thus, all the aspects of the future Torah of Klal Yisrael, at which the Yetzer Hara and the Umos Olam, the non-Jewish world, have always taken umbrage, are contained in this command, with which God began man's development. These are always things that we have a hard time with. Right, everyone, we know, even Klal Yisrael, at the pinnacle of our existence, we had Korach challenging the authority of Moshe, and is he the true, are we really getting the real stuff from Moshe? Maybe he's making up his own stuff. People are always tempted by foods. It's one of those things that the Yetzer Hara really pulls at us. Maybe I can have it, the Hechsher, maybe it's not so unkosher after all. Label says things are pretty okay on it. And all of these things pull at us all the time. And this command was given Lodas Tovara. Through this command, it will become known and revealed what is good for man, so that he should choose it, and what is bad for man, so that he should reject it. The subordination of our nature to God's will is a basic condition for all morality, a condition that is inseparable from man's moral calling. Moral freedom is the foundation of man's higher dignity, and there can be no moral freedom without the ability to do sin, as we all know. You have to be pulled in both directions. You have to have a temptation, or else you're not such a tzaddik for doing the right thing. Yet man cannot sin unless his senses are attracted to evil and repelled by goodness. Otherwise, man too, when choosing the good and shunning evil, would be acting only according to instinct, and he would cease to be man. Man's mastery over the urges of his senses, the subordination of his nature to the will of God, that is the whole eminence of man and the foundation of his whole education. The educator of mankind laid down in his first command the first principle of education. And then Hirsch adds, things have not changed. And the same applies today. We all stand before the tree of knowledge, as did Adam and Chava in their day. Faced with the demands of God's moral law, we have to decide whether to obey bodily sensuality, the imagination of the sensual mind, the wisdom of instinctive animal life, or to be mindful of our higher calling and to obey the voice of God. Today, too, we do not hear God's voice directly, but rely on oral tradition, just as the first command was given to man as a tradition to be transmitted orally. There is more here, but I'm going to leave it for tonight. I'm not going to get into the Sheva Mitzvot B'nei Noach. If you're interested, Hirsch here has 3 pages showing you how Chazal darshan the Sheva Mitzvot B'nei Noach right here. So if you want to see it, you want to get into that, this is where Chazal darshan a lot. And there's another place later in this parak also. We're not going to get into Sheva Mitzvot B'nei Noach. It's a whole separate point, and it doesn't really tie in directly to all the things that I want to get into for the whole approach that we're building. But for tonight, basically in a nutshell, we heard Aleph Beis of Yiddishkeit. It ties in to everything we've heard, that while the whole world instinctually listens to the Ratzon Hashem, Hashem B'davka created a place to teach us that despite the fact that place has something that makes no sense to us, the most tempting, delicious looking thing in the middle of the garden, all the roads seem to lead to that. Like, why not have of it? And we would have certainly tried that, maybe even the first tree of all, if all the paths are leading to that. Our minds would have led us to that. And without explanation, Hashem says, you may not have that. And that's the whole point. We don't have to know why. It's the Ratzon Hashem. And if we listen to the Ratzon Hashem, despite the fact that our Yetzirah is pulling us the other way, our logic is pulling us the other way, our sensual senses, our sense of taste, and everything we want seems to be the opposite, that's when our world can become a Gan Eden. Just like Hashem literally created a physical place where it flourishes if you listen, our whole world could be that too. He hinted to very briefly, Eretz Yisrael would be that for Klal Yisrael. And the point of Eretz Yisrael and Klal Yisrael is to teach that once again to all of man. Because once Adam and Chava failed, and ultimately the next 20 generations failed, and it had to now come through a rebuilding stage through an Avraham Avinu and eventually a whole Klal Yisrael, we were going to come back to a location where this could be relived if only we would live up to that. And the world would then see again how through listening to the Ratzon Hashem, the world flourishes, and they too would then want to do the same.